This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
Basically, removing alcohol was the thing that opened up so much and showed me, okay, I'm still having shit days. I'm still got the repercussions of the not treating my diabetes fantastically well, but I can get over them more. I don't have to live with them as badly as I used to. I know now that I am stronger, and the fact that I've quit alcohol, I also quit smoking as well. I used to smoke and I quit that 6 years ago. And yeah, so I've made so many positive changes that I know when the pain comes on or the chronic health issues, when they arise, I'm doing all right because I'm helping myself as much as I can. If I can do that and still not drink, then there's something good about this not drinking malarkey, I think.
Just a snippet there from this week's guest on Over the Influence. She's called Janine. She's from Kent. She is more than 900 days alcohol-free, and we love it. We say this so many times. We absolutely love it when a community member joins us on the podcast. I think he was around 2023, so we're approaching 18 months, 2 years-ish since Janine joined the community. What a journey she's been on. Just a heads up as well as to some of the topics that are touched on during the course of this episode. You will hear Janine talking about an eating disorder, mental health issues, and some complex health issues as well. So if you decide this episode isn't for you, we completely get that, but she's got a fantastic story of recovery to share. Take a listen.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Laura. I am a community member of OTI. I've been here since I was 34 days alcohol free. I'm now 8 months, and that is probably mostly down to OTI, the community, that support that you get through doing the Zooms. I do a few a week. I post in the forum and interact in the forum as well. I made some amazing friends. I wasn't what you would call an alcoholic, but I definitely felt like life was becoming unimaginable without alcohol. Every weekend was about going for drinks, having drinks with a meal, that sort of thing. And I just hated that control that alcohol was starting to have over me. So I started to question it, started listening to the podcast. Before I knew it, I joined the community. And I really didn't realise how much of a hold alcohol had until I stopped doing it. Being part of OTI helps me to navigate life without alcohol. And that's as simple as I can put it, really. I would urge anyone to join the community.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence, wherever you are listening to this in the world, because we're global, which is really quite exciting. Thank you for downloading us. Thank you for being there. If you are hearing us maybe for the very, very first time, where have you been over the last 5 years? So my name is Sharon Hartley. I am 51 years old and based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. This year, after the summer in September, I will be 7 years alcohol-free. Started on this, what I thought would be an absolute nonsense journey, just before I turned 45 in 2018. Decided to take a break from the booze. I just kept going and going and going, and basically everything changed, and it's really, really good having a life now where alcohol simply does not feature. I'm coming up for 7 years. Ben, my co-host, coming up for five, half a decade, Ben.
Yes, 5 years next month. I've been saying 5 years for ages, but it's actually 5 years next month. It's a mere few weeks away. I'm dad to Leo, stepdad to Alfie and Millie, husband to Jem. Sorry, I'm slightly distracted because when you said, oh, we're so global, I thought,
you've got in the back end, haven't you?
Checked.
You've got, in the back end. He's done it. He's gone there.
The yeah. I'm looking at the podcast analytics. And honestly, the list of countries where Over the Influence has now been downloaded, it's phenomenal. UK is number one. United States, Australia, Ireland, Canada, New Zealand. You'd imagine that because, you know, the English-speaking countries. But the other countries on this list: Denmark, France, the Netherlands, Germany, South Africa, the UAE, Belgium, Sweden, Iceland, Hong Kong, Norway, Singapore, Thailand, Mexico, Italy, Isle of Man, Portugal, Switzerland, Finland, Jersey, Greece, Korea, Turkey, Israel, Vietnam, Japan, Austria, Serbia, India, Cyprus, Bahrain, Czech Republic, Brazil, Poland, Morocco, Indonesia, Paraguay, Botswana, Zambia, St. Kitts and Nevis, Nigeria, Croatia, Bulgaria, Saudi Arabia, Luxembourg, Andorra, Romania. And I'm going to stop there.
Seriously? Right. Okay. A plea to you. If you are in one of those squillion countries there, we want to know who you are, why you're listening, where you're up to on your alcohol-free journey. Ben, that's a lot of countries.
Isn't it amazing? When we started this podcast 5 years ago, we didn't think that anyone in our own country would listen.
No, we did.
Who chooses to remove your mom, my dad?
Thank you. We had two listeners.
But to read that list of countries, this is, it just shows you how many people are thinking, you know what, how am I getting on with this? Is this serving me? Should I carry on? Actually, would my life be better if I hadn't? You know, it's nutshells. We were talking on the Premium podcast about how many people we've seen now come through OTI over the years. And it's, you know, hundreds, probably more like thousands, actually, when you think about how many people have come through the community and listened to the podcast. I can't believe our guest today, like when she said how many days alcohol free, I remember when it was early, like the first few weeks. I cannot believe that this person is now over 900 days alcohol free.
Amazing.
Right.
Let's get into it.
Sorry, I got slightly distracted there, but that is cool, isn't it? All those countries.
It's brilliant.
It's awesome.
And I want to know from the people listening in all those countries, drop us an email, OTIHQ, overtheinfluence.co.uk.
What are the alcohol-free options like in Andorra?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. On St. Kitts, in Botswana, in Iceland.
Yeah, we'd love to know.
Oh, it's brilliant. So good. Right, we're doing it again. We're digressing, and that was a really long intro.
Sorry, Janine.
This week on the podcast, we have got one of our community members joining us. Over 900 days alcohol-free. In fact, to be precise, 903 days today. At the time of recording, Janine is from Kent. Janine, welcome to Over the Influence. How the heck are you doing?
Thank you. I'm even more nervous now you said all them countries.
It's no biggie.
Cool, isn't it?
No biggie. Don't you worry about
it. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I'm apart from having this cold and stuff, I'm doing well. We just got back actually last week from a week's trip in Ibiza. And it was beautiful. Oh, nice. Oh, no. And then you come back to this weather. Nice. It's quite interesting because you were saying about alcohol-free options. So when I first, cause it was all inclusive. So when I first got there, I was sort of, oh, no. You know, I just didn't see anything advertised or whatever. But then I discovered after about 2 days that they did have alcohol-free beer on the all-inclusive. So I was really happy about that. So they're obviously definitely now including that, I would say, in most European countries and so it's really good to know. Really good to know.
Well, it's nice to have you.
Can I start off by asking? Would you mind? How did you find OTI, Janine?
Okay, so I was thinking about, I had a lot and lot of issues, and I kind of then accepted to the fact that, this drinking was not going well. And so I just basically, as one does, you know, Google it, sort of looking for information. And then basically, I think it just Googled and you came up as one of the podcasts. So I thought, oh, right, okay, I'll have a listen. And I really liked that you guys, you know, just seem like sort of people you know, like friends you could bump into in the street and everything, and how just sort of, and it was just really funny. And I just loved the things of how you two sort of talk to each other and everything. It just seemed so sort of nice to listen to it and sort of think, okay, maybe I can do this. There's obviously a lot more support out there than I thought there would be, because it was November 2022 I quit, so just like at the back end of COVID and everything. So that, yeah, I just then started to really suddenly feel like, okay, because I did the whole gave up for Lent that year. And I couldn't wait to get back to it. I literally was like giving it up then, and that was just going to be, for a while. But then sort of my health was just deteriorating so much through it. And it was to the point where, I don't massively use the word alcoholic, but if I would say, yeah, I was not physically, thank God, I was able to stop without having any of the symptoms that you hear about that can be very scary. And obviously, I did.
We always say, sorry, to you.
That's fine.
You know, talk to your GP.
Yes,
you know,
I did. Yeah,
to stop drinking alcohol. You know,
absolutely.
So, yeah, we always need to get that disclaimer in.
Oh yeah, no worries. That's it. I mean, I did go. Oh God, it was. So I sat there with my doctor and she asked how much alcohol I'd drunk that past week. And this is shameful. It worked out. I think it was 146 units in 1 week. So how the hell did that? And she actually laughed and said, that's really impressive. Obviously not.
Hang on
not
a minute.
Meaning it that
Hang
way.
On a minute. Yeah. I mean, really?
Yes.
I mean, it's a pretty desperate situation, that, Jean.
I know.
That's not the response you would want.
That's it. She was like, wow, that's really impressive. Ha ha. And I was like, that's just, oh my God. You know, that was terrifying. And I think as well, when you find out sort of, or you think about more sort of units and stuff, you realise actually, you know, you might think to yourself, I don't know, a lot of people probably think to themselves, oh well, I've only had, you know, one bottle of wine, what's that, a couple of units. But when you really look at it, you think, actually, no.
Well, yeah.
That's, you know,
it's
so
reminded me, we had James, was it James on from Fancier Walk, mate? This is like 2 years ago now. It's a long time ago. But he was talking about how he went to his doctor and they gave him like you know, keep a diary of it.
Yeah.
And he was drinking, I think, look, don't quote me on this. Mm-hmm. Go back and have a listen to James's Fancier Walk, mate episode.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure he said that he was drinking, when he actually wrote it down, four times more than he thought
he was.
Oh, God,
just
yeah.
When he actually wrote it down, and tracked it properly, it was four times more units than he thought he was drinking. Like, sorry, back to you.
This is the thing. No, it's fine. So basically, and I was literally having a slow death with the amount I was drinking and with all my other health concerns. And it was a case of, like, I really had to make a choice. I always say that I had a rock bottom about 9 months before I quit, and that I'm a type 1 diabetic. So I have to have an insulin pump and insulin, check my blood sugars, obviously do everything. I must say the care of diabetes now from when I was diagnosed is absolutely fantastic. So that's been a massive help. However, I was drinking to a point where I would go into comas quite regularly. I would sort of come round with kind of an ambulance man sitting at the end of the bed, and then my poor husband would be woken up by me or found me or whatever, where I was just so intoxicated. I would forget. I would have blackouts. I would do things like take a shot of insulin, thinking I would go and then eat something before I went to sleep that night, and didn't eat a thing. So I was basically insulin overdosing on a very regular basis, ending up in hospital. And she's nearly nine. She's nine in July. I also have some other daughters who are older. But, you know, this would have been from her age, sort of from her being about one to then this going on until she was, gosh, how old was she? She would have been six, I think, when I did finally sort of knock it on the head. And, I came round then at one point, and I was in the hospital. And this was during COVID, because I remember thinking, oh, am I here? Because I could not remember hardly a thing. I thought, am I here? Because I've got COVID. What's going on? What's going on? And then basically I had the night before, as I said, planned to eat. I don't think I'd eaten anything all that day. I'd then accidentally taken a huge overdose. I had also, because I suffered with mental health issues and things like that, I had also then taken sleeping tablets that night. So all of this, and God knows how much, because it was a case of I would drink, and then if it would get really late, everyone else had gone to bed, and I'd just make excuses to want to stay downstairs, and I would find anything I could find in that cupboard, even if it's something I just would never touch, and just carry on, and just to the point where obviously I didn't know what I was doing. And that was the last time I ended up in hospital with my diabetes. But that time then was very scary. My bloods were all up the wall. And, you know, the doctors were very concerned. And of course, I'm saying, oh, no, I just obviously had a bit too much. No, I'm absolutely fine and all of this. And then I did finally admit that actually, you know, this might be a problem because my memory, and this seems to be happening to me really quite regularly. And my poor husband, I think at that point, was just sort of like, this can't go on. You know, this, it was too much. I mean, God, you have to try and get through the guilt, don't you, still, of things that have occurred when you've been such a massive a big drinker and tried to kind of soothe your problems with it or escape them. You know, I think, God, what I put him through, how he's still here is a bloody amazing. He's absolutely amazing. And it was a case of, you know, he couldn't do that, you know, we couldn't do that, not to Charlotte anymore, my little one, because it's not fair for her to wake up and her mum's in hospital, or even wake up and seeing, you know, which she had done before, the ambulance people would be there. So, you know, it was a real kind of, for me, like, felt very much a rock bottom. It was like, if I don't stop, or if I don't change things dramatically, this is, you know, things aren't going to work out. So, of course, I did the whole, that's when I gave up for Lent. And then I did the whole, it's fine, I'll just, you know, just have a couple at the weekend, which I did carry on doing. But then I started to get a bit, it was after about 6 months of doing that, again, I'd be wasting weekends feeling really hungover. And it started to get to the point where it was like, I was binge drinking at a weekend then. I wasn't drinking Monday to Thursday, absolutely fine. No, Thursday night I wouldn't drink, but then obviously those 3 days then I was just binge drinking. And of course, and then I started reading Alcohol Explained, the book. I've forgotten who bloody wrote it.
William Porter.
That's it, William Porter. And I remember I started,
Chaz's sort of, fave.
Oh my God, I know, he's amazing. That's it, I started.
Especially when he goes on Instagram and takes his top off. I'm not quite sure why he does it. It's because he was promoting his diet and fitness
that
book.
Was it.
That's oh yeah, I heard yeah. That was a new, I should probably start listening to that one as well then and check out his Instagram. I think he might be a friend on Facebook. And yeah, so I remember listening to that. This is when I was starting to feel like, let's try giving up long. Let's try going a fortnight. Let's try going 3 weeks. And I was doing this. And then I was starting to also exercise again, starting to sort of just try and get my diabetes sorted. Obviously, even though the main thing that was killing my was killing me was obviously the massive amounts of drinking and not dealing with my problems head on. So I listened to him on my podcast. I remember walking around local woods and grounds and stuff and trying to get fit as well as listening to, and it was after listening to that and then listening to your guys' podcast that I finally, and it was strange then because it was as if I'm now going to have to say, if I stop, I'm stopping. So I know you guys have obviously said before, and I know it happens with a lot of people, you know, you'll go a month or you'll say you'll go nine, whatever. But it was the case of, no, if I'm stopping this, I've got to stop this, and I've got to stop this with the idea of I'm stopping this now forever, which can seem like a very long time. But I guess for me, I think I'm quite an all or nothing person anyway. I think if it had been, oh, well, I'll do another few weeks or I'll do a year. No, it had to be. But that kept me going. That kept me doing it. And it's because even, I mean, as I said, I have two elder daughters who's 23 and 21. So they'd obviously seen a hell of a lot, especially during COVID, where to me, as soon as it was COVID, it was like, right, we're drinking every night. We're just, yeah, going for this. We can't go out or move or do anything. So we are getting the beers, you know. So they, you know, and it was a horrible time anyway, COVID. And when again, it's like the whole guilt of my older daughters could see me going into hospital. The ambulances turning up and everything. They witnessed it from even when they were younger, from when I had other health issues that were really sort of making things extremely difficult. And I was, you know, again, trying to deal with the guilt of everything. I think I'm getting there. I'm trying hard.
I want to jump in there. I want to talk more about that. And if at any point you feel uncomfortable talking about any of this, because it's a lot, It gets an awful lot. But also, today, you know, 903 days sober. What has it been like the last 903 days in recovery, finding out who you are, dealing with the guilt, dealing with the shame, finding this new version of you beneath everything? And also, we'll come on to talk about your health and your mental health shortly.
My dog's just appeared.
Very cute dog on the Zoom call. What's it been like for you this last 903 days? I imagine it's been one hell of a process.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, you know the pink, is it the pink clouds and stuff everyone talks about? Or I read it in a book or something. And I must admit, for the first couple of months, I was like, went back to the gym. I was out walking half marathons every day. I was just really, really, I mean, obviously trying hard. But yeah, it really did feel, it felt fantastic. And, you know, again, life does, I mean, don't get me wrong, of course, but I still had a hell of a lot of issues to deal with. Life wasn't suddenly, drinking was a major, major issue. But before I'd started drinking, I suffered with an eating disorder for 20 years. And as I said, I've suffered with depression, it feels like, since I was about 15 years old. So it was real kind of... then feeling I've got to really, I can't numb this anymore, or I can try, you know, I mean, exercise, again, absolute massive advocate for it, for your mental health, for helping with recovery, for every part of, you know, brilliant. And now I did start off and was really, really going for it. I kind of then started to think to myself, or I think a friend said to me, actually, you know, do you think you're replacing your alcohol addiction for exercise addiction? I think I did feel, I don't care. I'm sorry. I would rather be a bloody exercise freak than an alcoholic. It's much better for me. But I think, as I've said to you and as I said to you guys, that obviously because I've had chronic health issues, there was still a hell of a lot to deal with. And so I would say get to a point where, say, if the diabetes was being, sometimes with diabetes, you can do everything right. You can eat right, exercise, take the right amount of insulin, check your blood sugars, avoid any unnecessary stress, blah, blah, blah. And for 1 week, you've got it. Your sugars are staying in range. You feel fantastic. And then for absolutely no reason, the following week, you're doing the exact same thing. And it just it's like a roller coaster. It'll suddenly be shooting up and down. And you suddenly feel like absolute crap for the next week. But it can be extremely frustrating. And then it got to a point then, after a while, everything was good and I was very much taking care of myself. But I was still finding, and I was then sort of thinking, when I was getting then, say, into a year and a half of recovery, I was still like, well, hang on a minute, my body is still feeling rough. I am still finding, I mean, I do have complications of mistreating my diabetes because I was diagnosed when I was 12. I'm 47 now. So it's 35 years I've been insulin dependent. And there were times, as you can probably imagine, where I didn't give a toss. I was, you know, I'd just been diagnosed 5 days before my teenage birthday.
Janine, just before you go on, now, you might have heard me say something similar to this on the podcast before. I'm not saying that me and Sharon are idiots, right? But, you know, there might be someone out there who isn't as well-versed as me and Sharon are.
Yeah.
In exactly the differences between, for example, type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes.
Yeah.
The thing I'd like to talk about is... You know what, before we go on, could you just explain what type 1 diabetes is? I think it's something that a lot of people will have heard of. Of course they will have heard of type 1 diabetes.
Yeah.
But I don't think that necessarily everyone knows the difference between type 1 and type 2, for example. Can you just tell us about type 1 diabetes before we carry on?
I can. Okay, well, type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease. So basically that means that my insulin-producing cells are being attacked in my body by some other thing. I can't remember. I used to know the science of it, but so basically,
and this is something you were born.
No,
you were Or right?
No, okay. No, I wasn't born with it. It was 5 days before my 13th birthday I was diagnosed. I started noticing that I had to keep drinking. We went on a school day trip to France and I would have been in the year seven drinking, I think it was 12 cartons of orange juice within an hour and being told off by my teachers because I needed the toilet the whole time. I went, no, this is ridiculous. I was falling asleep all the time. I'd lost a hell of a lot of weight for absolutely no reason at all. So I got very ill and lots of symptoms.
But am I right in thinking that there's a difference between type, like, for example, if somebody makes poor lifestyle choices, then that can lead to type 2 diabetes.
That's right. Yes, definitely.
Type 1 diabetes, is it hereditary? It's not necessarily linked to lifestyle, is it? Or is it? You tell me.
No, type 1 diabetes is not linked to lifestyle. And unfortunately, there is still a lot of people out there that don't know that. I mean, why would you if you didn't know someone with diabetes, to be fair?
Exactly.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, there was absolutely nothing I could have done. I mean, obviously, I was quite young anyway, but I could have been, you know, training for the athletics or something and fantastic, but I still would have got type 1 diabetes because it was my body attacking itself, which is what it still does. Type 2 is very much sort of to where people, their insulin receptor cells basically stop working as well, so they may need to go on medication or injections, and they would be advised to sort of lose weight, make better food choices, because then some people can then actually get rid of type 2 diabetes altogether.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it would involve being very restrictive, but it can actually happen that people with type 2 doesn't, whereas mine, it's never, unless, I mean, it's coming along, obviously, leaps and bounds, but mine, I can't get rid of. There's nothing I can do to get rid of it. There's nothing a doctor or anyone can do to get rid of it. I have to live with it and give myself my insulin.
But has your experience then of living with it changed? It sounds, I think I probably know the answer to this.
Yeah.
Since you removed alcohol, because you talked about, you know, in the past, depression.
Yeah.
You said, and eating disorder as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But is that something that was in your, are those things that were in your past? Is it in terms of health now? Is it type 1 diabetes?
Yeah.
Which is, so it's not necessarily, you know, those are things that are in the past now, or would you say that they still have an impact today?
My eating disorder in the past, which is fantastic because I've sort of suffered for 20 years. I think, unfortunately, again, this is something that I think can happen, is that when I've improved with my eating disorder and started to get better with that, I did start to drink more. I was a bit of a person that kind of replaced things with other things, but that time I was still extremely hurting and did have a lot of therapy that has helped me a lot, but removing alcohol was probably the best thing I did for my diabetes.
And why?
Well, because basically sugars, your liver produces glucose when you're a normal person. Not that I'm not normal. For normal people.
Well, say a typical
person. Yeah, that's it.
That's the language that we use, for example, around, you know, when we're talking about Leo, for example.
Completely.
So anyway.
So your liver will chuck out glucose when you have alcohol in your body. Mine can't. Mine basically will store the sugar in there, but it can't release it. So what will inevitably happen after you've had a lot of alcohol is your blood sugars will then drop. And if you're extremely tired as well for all the drinking and whatever, then a lot of the time you won't wake up until your blood sugar level has gone so low that you're then unconscious. And it basically was what happened to me. I would a lot of the time go unconscious. The sugars were so low. And especially if there was extra insulin on board that was kind of trying to make this happen even more. And there was no food in my system, no carbohydrates or anything to sort of produce. No food or no kind of anything to use that insulin up with, if I'm making any sense at all.
Yes.
So it then made, you know, So a lot of the doctors and nurses were like, oh, okay, you've been drinking, that explains it. Obviously, there was more to do with it than that, but that would always be how I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, it's fine. I won't drink that much again, blah, blah, blah. But now, I mean, I am on an insulin pump and I also have a machine that will record the blood sugar for me onto the pump. But I was on that anyway. And it always worked well, but with the drink, I mean, I have not had, I think, a really bad, it's called hypoglycemia, when your sugar level goes below 4, I was getting readings of 0.8. They were so low. The doctors have said to me, you're very lucky to still be here. And then alcohol would obviously change my mood. It would let the depression in. Tenfold, you know, I could hide it during the day, I could be much, but then I'd have the first hour of drinking, I'm amazing, I can go and, you know, walk a mountain tomorrow, climb Mount Everest, whatever, and then it slowly and slowly it would get, the depression would open up, and then everything would come out and I would be cross and I would be upset and I would be sad and I would get so more depressed that then I was drinking just to kind of destroy myself even more, because I was not happy with what I was feeling and what I'd been through and everything. So again, the improvement on my mental health, again, through not drink again, has been just amazing. Absolutely amazing. And it's now when people say, if they're telling me about feeling, I will often sort of say, you know, careful when you're drinking, you know, be careful when you're drinking, because it does, it can open dams, and before you know it, your depression has gone from 10% to 110%, and it's a depressant, isn't it?
Yeah. And moving
it's literally
away,
its job.
Moving away from the impact that removing alcohol has had on your physical health and your mental health as well, which obviously, you know, listening to what you're talking about, it's an absolute no-brainer. It's absolutely fantastic. 904 days alcohol-free. Mm. What's the bigger picture? Away from health, what does life look like for you now as a wife and as a mum and as somebody in the mid-40s?
Yeah, I mean, this is it. That is obviously one thing I did want to discuss, is that because I have type 1 diabetes and because I have complications of type 1 diabetes, I still sometimes feel like I wake up with a hangover, even though I'm not, but it's all the other aspects of my physical health that my body unfortunately has incurred. I have nerve damage, which produces quite a lot of pain. I nearly went blind, which thank God doctors saved my eyesight. So there's lots of things, and I have got to the point before I thought, why am I still doing this? What's the point? You know, if I'm waking up feeling like crap anyway, because I've had a bad night with the pain, or, you know, I have bad stomach issues for the diabetes, if that's been going on, what's the bloody point kind of thing? But then it's like, well, it would have been worse. The hangover would have been a hell of a lot worse. And I would not be now where I am, where I'm happy. I'm really enjoying life. My daughter, my two other daughters are adults. I can have really great relationships with them now. They are still there, even from what I put them through, they're still there, which is amazing. My husband and I have a much better life together, because I'm not attacking him anymore for just the most stupidest things. My outlook, yeah, is basically to get fitter and climb lots of mountains with you guys.
Fine by us.
I put myself for the 3 peaks in September. I'm just absolutely praying.
Oh, get the miles in. Get that training done, Janine. Oh, my goodness, man.
Oh, God, that's it. So, yeah, life now does look, I'm so looking forward to it, which is such a change.
You know what, as well,
I'm really glad that we got onto this. Go on,
just very quickly say, without being dramatic.
Yeah.
You're lucky to be alive.
This is it. Yeah.
Like, you really are, from everything you've shared with us with regards to health and drinking, which is brilliant. I'm really glad you stopped drinking.
Oh, thank
Sorry,
you.
it's the bit in your email, Janine, where you say at the end, you talk about how it's massively improved your mental health, but it's this line here. I really want to open the conversation about how you stay sober with a chronic illness.
Yeah.
And I think it's really great to hear you talking about how your life has improved in so many different ways, removing alcohol. Because, you know, how often do we talk about this, Chaz? You know, people go, right, remove alcohol and then suddenly everything's perfect.
Yeah.
And
it's not
a hard thing. Life still happens. You know, and for you, you were 15 years old. Mm-hmm. You said, sorry, 30. Were you 13 years old?
Just before my 13th birthday. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So 12. You were 12 when you had this diagnosis.
Yeah.
This is something that you've lived with for a really long time.
Yeah.
And it's something that you will continue to live with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's great to hear that even though life isn't perfect, and that this is something that you've got to manage and, you know, think about and live with every single day, life is still better.
Yes.
It's still better dealing with, being a type 1 diabetic as an alcohol-free person.
Yeah.
It's still better to do. And I think that's really great that you've come on to share that.
Thank you. That's it. And I think there is sort of sometimes where I think, you know, there will be lots of other people out there, I'm sure, that are sort of struggling still physically and do have those days where they're like, oh, for God's sake, you know, I've done this, I've done that, and I still feel like crap. So why am I doing, you know, there's that monkey brain in your head, isn't there, that just goes, oh, you know, this is getting stupid now. I might as well be drinking down the pub because I was having so much more fun. Obviously, it wasn't having so much more fun. But that still happens as a human being. You're still going to be like, oh, you know, I've had another weekend where I've pretty much not been able to do a hell of a lot. But then you get those weekends where you can do so much more, and I will maybe have a bad week. I will maybe have a bad weekend, but I can have good weeks. And good weeks for me are stuff or getting out, walking the dog, being able to go in the shops and buy the things I like to eat, having lovely times with my daughters, spending time with my husband. You know, for me, that's good weeks. I'm not wanting to be a millionaire or, you know, climb Everest, but...
He's not climbing Everest at any point, Janine. Okay?
No.
Oh, fair enough.
I just want to pick you up on your wording around it. So why do you feel like the conversation needs to be opened? So you say here, I really want to open the conversation about how you stay sober with a chronic illness. So why do you think that it's not being, why do we need to open that conversation? Why is it not being talked about?
I do worry sometimes that it is the case of, you know, quit drinking and everything will change. And I think this does, you know, a lot of stuff you read, a lot of stuff I heard, listen to other podcasts, things, you know, stuff you see on TV. There is this whole kind of, well, once alcohol's removed, everything will be better. And it really is so much better. But when you have a continuing thing that you're still battling every day, there is that, you know, if it might be, just a good thing for then someone to come and say, actually, I've given up alcohol, but I still feel like shit. So can someone have a chat? Or just, you know, because there's, you know, there's been times, you know, I can remember where I've been in the pub. I'm drinking non-alcoholic beer, everyone else. And there's been times in my head where it's gone like, well, I could go to the bar on my own. I could get, no one's going to notice any difference. No one's going to think, oh, she's suddenly got an alcoholic beer. And again, that's probably that weird monkey in the brain, is it? But I still, and you know, and it's been like, oh, you might feel better then. You might have, you know, if your weekend's crap, you've got an excuse for your weekend being crap. But I do still manage to hold, I think as well, that being that I'm thinking now, oh, I'm going to be 1,000 days in like 97 days, that keeps me going. And things like your podcast keep me going. The idea of, going to do 3 peaks, even if I manage the 2 out of the 3, I will be really happy. It's things like that that I have to really think about then to keep me going, because a lot of the time you do just feel like, oh, surely my hangovers were just this crap anyway. I'm sure they weren't. And as we said, I am lucky. I don't know. If I'd have carried on, I can honestly say probably 90% certain I probably wouldn't be here. So I have a life, which is great.
I won't reveal who I'm talking about because, you know, we keep confidences. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like removing alcohol has allowed you, and feel free to disagree with this, by the way, this is another person's experience.
Yeah.
But do you feel like it's allowed you to take some sort of control back, or a feeling of control back, by removing alcohol in terms of the type 1 diabetes? Or do you, or are they kind of, is that not, is that, you know, no, absolutely never even entered my brain.
No.
The reason I say it is because it's what this person was saying to me is that there are lots of things that are outside of my control.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, but, you know, what I can do is I can do this.
Yeah.
And by doing that, it makes that better. Mm-hmm. And it might not make everything better.
Yeah.
But it, do you feel that?
I do. Yes. 100% I do. And, you know, and it does, it speaks for itself. I mean, the last results I had for, which show your blood sugars over 3 months, it was down to that of a non-diabetic person. And so I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. That's so good. That's, you know, and as I said, my husband hasn't had to come to my rescue now for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. We don't even have to store the pens. I used to get through one a week to wake me up. I haven't had any of them in my fridge. I probably should get some more in, but I haven't had any in my fridge for months and months and months because we're just not using them. They go out of date, and it's improved so much. And just the whole clarity of being able to check your blood sugars more often, or being able to then get the funding for this pump that I have that makes a hell of a... I couldn't have done any of that when I was still drinking. None of it. You know, I did not give a toss. I didn't, yeah. So, yeah, removing alcohol was the thing that opened up so much and showed me, okay, I'm still having shit days. I'm still got the repercussions of the not treating my diabetes fantastically well, but I can get over them more. I don't have to live with them as badly as I used to. I know now that I am stronger. And the fact that I've quit alcohol, I also quit smoking as well. I used to smoke and I quit that 6 years ago. And yeah, so I've made so many positive changes that I know when the pain comes on, or the chronic health issues, when they arise, I'm doing all right because I'm helping myself as much as I can. If I can do that and still not drink, then there's something good about this not drinking malarkey, I think.
It is a malarkey, isn't it? It really is. And we think you're doing a little bit better than all right.
Thank you.
Janine, thank you so much for sharing so honestly.
You're welcome. I went off on a bit of a roll.
Hey, listen, it's what this podcast is about. A lot of people get in touch with us and they say, what are you going to ask me? We go, we don't know. We don't have set questions. We just see where the conversation takes us. One final question from me. On a scale of 1 to 10, how proud do you feel of where you are now?
Now talking to you guys again and having a realization here that, oh God, actually, yeah, no, I've actually done really well. I'm actually feeling probably about a 9 out of 10.
Oh, come on, you could do better than that. 9.5 at least.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Oh God, yeah. And honestly, there are days where it's 10 out of 10. Brilliant. You know, I do feel like, yeah, you know, I've got my life back. I'm not dying anymore. I'm living.
There's nothing else to say to that. That is amazing. Janine, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us at Over the Influence.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thanks so much for talking to me. And yeah, and I do mean, if anyone in the community is struggling with health or issue and they want to just have a rant and say, God, you know, this is actually quite shit at the moment, I'm always on the end of an email or whatever.